Hello, everyone. My name is Karma Harris, and I'm a public health consultant with the National Association of Chronic Disease Directors, also known as NACDD for short. I've had the privilege over the last few years of leading and managing the Reaching People with Disabilities Through Healthy Communities project, which is a project funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. This project really builds upon a previous Healthy Communities model used by NACDD and was modified to consist of six phases that really are a crucial part of the inclusive healthy community change process that are focused on improving the health and well-being of people with disabilities. These phases are: phase one is the commitment phase, phase two is the assessment and training phase, phase three is the prioritization and planning phase, phase four is implementation, phase five is evaluation, and phase six is communication and dissemination. Today, our podcast will feature our state expert advisor from Montana, Dr. Meg Tracy, in our discussion on this project's phase three, which is prioritization and planning. This phase consists of three really critical activities, and you're going to hear about all three today. The first activity in this phase really is about reviewing and prioritizing those assessment results and understanding what the assessment data is telling us. The second activity involves taking a look at some proven evidence and practice-based strategies that are inclusive and good strategies that would fall in this policy system environmental change category, which is what we've asked our communities to do for us, and really looking at a list and a framework of strategies that are already existing so that communities could have a little bit of help in determining the policy system and environmental change approaches that they would put on their action plan. And then the third activity in this phase really involved developing a community action plan of those inclusive policy system or environmental change strategies. And specifically, we had our communities to try and pursue at least four of those policy system environmental approaches, and many of them accomplished more than four. And so to help us learn more about this phase today, Dr. Meg Tracy from Montana, from the Montana Disability and Health Program, is going to help us navigate each of these three major activities within phase three, prioritization and planning. So welcome, Meg. Before we dive into our discussion on the prioritization and planning phase, I just want you to kind of help our listeners learn a little bit more about you and your role as a state expert advisor, and maybe help us learn about our two Montana communities. So will you first start by telling us more about your experience as the Montana State Expert Advisor for this project?
Hello, everyone. I'm Meg Tracy, and I'm the state expert for the Montana Disability and Health Program. I sit in what's called a University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities Education, Research, and Services, or a USED. These organizations exist in every state. They're supported through the Federal Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Act. Our role is to leverage the resources of university systems to improve the lives of disabilities in our state. And we do that by improving education to be more inclusive, working on services and research programs, an agenda that really build out more opportunities for people with disabilities to be healthy and to participate fully in lives in all of our states. So there's a national network of USEDs, and you can learn more about those at AUCD.org.
Very good. Speaking of your communities, why don't you also tell us a little bit about the two Montana communities that participated in this project and a little bit about your process for how you selected them to participate in the application process with you?
Well, we were really lucky to be able to work with two communities. One is Butte Silver Bow. Butte is a city of about 35,000 people. About 17% of the residents identify as having disability. Butte is in south central Montana. Its history is with mining, and it's a really fantastic community of people who have many connections over many years and generations to living full and healthy lives in Montana, but also being connected nationally, internationally through the mining industry. So it's a very cool town. Then also we worked in Helena, which is up the road from Butte, about an hour on I-15. It's our capital in the state, and lots of history in Helena working towards being inclusive of people with disabilities, and lots of healthy communities work there. We landed on these two communities based on the history we had of running a program called the Building Active Communities Initiative. It's an adoption of the National Walkability Action Institute model within the state of Montana.
Now we're going to dive into our discussion on phase three, the prioritization and planning. And three really important activities that take place in this phase, and each is sequential. So to accomplish the next one, you have to do the first one, and accomplish the third one, you got to do the second one. So the first activity involves reviewing the community assessment results and prioritizing the focus areas on those results. And in our example with this project, the CHEESE, the Community Health Inclusion Index, was a community assessment that we chose for this project. And the CHEESE provided communities with an overview of local assets and gaps, and their CHEESE data really help the community coaches and the coalition be able to better identify inclusive areas of healthy living that needed to be addressed so that everyone, regardless of the presence of a disability or not, could have the same access to healthy living strategies. And so by reviewing this data, it really helps ensure that the community coaches who are leading this with their coalitions on the local level and really use the data to drive the priorities that they choose to focus on. And you can ensure then that it aligns with the current needs. And so this is one way of making sure that priorities are really kind of used for real-time direction in changing the community landscape of healthy living. And so Meg, thinking sort of about all of this, thinking just about this data review of the CHEESE results at this time, talk to us a little bit about what that data review process was like for your two communities.
So we had in Montana some familiarity with the CHEESE and using that tool and the landscape of tools that it sits within. Our Centers for Independent Living, again, through that Accessibility Ambassadors Project, you know, have used a variety of different tools for identifying priorities in the community that could be improved from the perspective of people who live with disabilities. And so from our group, it was really important to have the people who would be conducting the CHEESE have expertise in the ADA so that when we were engaging partners at the community level, there are questions on the CHEESE that are fairly general about accessibility. And we knew they would start conversations with facility administrators that we really wanted people who could clarify what is required under the ADA with those partners. So we were engaging with kind of an agenda, a conversation using the CHEESE about what the facility or the program had to offer. And we knew that conversation, just in conducting those assessments, would raise questions about, well, what is required under the ADA, for example, in signage on the elevator, or in terms of a route of entrance to our building, or in terms of bathroom accessibility. And we wanted the people doing the assessments to have very strong expertise to answer those questions or to plan a time to come back and do more detailed ADA-type assessments. But the CHEESE in and of itself was to create a lot of information for a broad Healthy Communities Coalition or planning group to consider. And we, in Butte, we had our ADA ambassador there, our accessibility ambassador, went out and reviewed the YMCA, the building that houses the Developmental Disabilities Council, a family planning clinic, high school that was private, a pharmacy, one of our larger employers, Northwestern Energy, a public high school, community gardens, farmers market, the local college, Montana Tech, and so through those assessments, we were able to kind of say generally how we've got a lot of great things to connect to. And a lot of those facilities, those programs are basically accessible. Yes, there are probably some things under the ADA that could be improved. And but through accommodations, probably an individual can be included. We always want to see, you know, those facilities as accessible as they can be. But the larger issue that emerged in Butte was that transit rated availability rate 60% or less than 92% of the sites. And some of the crossings, the intersections, people getting to those facilities were problematic as well. So we really started to think about one of the quotes from a team member who was completing the CHEESE said the facilities are really doing pretty well at being inclusive and want to include people with disabilities, but I'd be amazed if anyone can get to them. So we really started to focus in Butte on connectivity. It also engaged and activated a lot of partners to think about organizing at a community level around projects like transportation and connectivity. And that was really good. In Helena, we had some other types of groups that were part of our CHEESE. We looked at the Center for Mental Health, Exploration Works, which is a kind of like a children's museum. And then there's a campus for the University of Montana called Helena College, again, the YMCA in Helena. There's the community food bank, Helena Food Share, a clinic imaging center, the public health department, which was really important to see how people are connecting there. And there's still work that goes on around that. Natural Grocers, our community health center, an elementary school, Parks and Recreation. All of these groups were a part of conducting CHI and bringing those data to the Healthy Communities Coalition. And again, the overall impression was that we have a lot of goodwill for any of these programs or facilities to be accessible and inclusive, and many assets in that regard supported that, but it was connecting. How can people get there using active transportation, biking, walking, public transportation that was accessible to them?
Yeah, I think one of the things when we do a community health assessment of any kind, and then we involve our partners in that process and also in the review of what the assessment data tells us, is that it gives us another opportunity to further educate the partners involved in the project. And a lot of times what we find is that that actually leads to more partner buy-in and being part of the rest of the project activities. And I think that I saw that across the board with this project, and I definitely can see that with our two Montana communities as well. Now, as we talk about the second major activity in this phase, so the first one is really reviewing those results. The second activity of this phase involves reviewing other best practice or example policy systems and environmental change sample strategies for healthy eating, physical activity, general accessibility improvement, and tobacco use or prevention that are accessible and inclusive of people with disabilities. And there's a lot of best practice policy system environmental list out there, but it's really important for this project for us to review one that is inclusive to persons with disabilities. But for this project, our project partners at the National Center for Health, Physical Activity, and Disability, or NCPAD for short, they shared with us a framework that they developed that they used that worked out really well for our project. And that framework is called the GRADES framework, which stands for Guidelines, Recommendations, Adaptations, Including Disability. And this framework really provided a great menu of inclusive healthy eating and physical activity strategies that communities could look at and see if it aligns with their data and could plan to use on their community action plan and implement to improve the health and well-being of all the residents, which include people with disabilities. So our 10 communities were instructed to take their assessment results and develop an action plan, but we really felt like adding the second step in this phase was critical for getting them to start thinking about what are some of those best practices that are already out there that revolve around these healthy living focus areas that are inclusive. And so we had them really look at the GRADES tool, and I know we're going to hear a little bit about that from you. It's really important to note also that we wanted our teams to use a policy system environmental change approach in lieu of programmatic strategies, because we feel like the policy system environmental approaches are more impactful in terms of the number of people that they represent and potentially reach in the community, as well as are more sustainable. And so I'll kind of give an example here, but I'd like to give the examples I'm thinking about programs and policy system environmental changes. For example, a New Year's weight loss program might target people at a work site, and they might set it up for a few months in order to lose that holiday weight and start their year off healthy. But a more sustainable approach might consist of the worksite developing a new policy that allows employees to take walk breaks during the day, or a systems approach that says, you know what, we're going to pay for our employees' membership at a local gym, or we're going to give discounts based on them going to a gym, or an environmental change that might include construction of an on-site gym or placement of healthy vending throughout the worksite. So these are examples of healthy living strategies in this worksite sector that would be more long-standing and sustainable than a simple weight loss program that might last a few months. And so with that lens in mind, Meg, as we continue talking really about this policy system environmental change approach and reviewing it against a framework like NCPAD GRADES tool, I kind of want to hear from you a little bit on your perspective about how your communities use the GRADES and how they benefited from it. So how useful do you think our project partners in Butte and Montana comparing their CHI assessment results to a framework like the GRADE was and helping them eventually develop their action plan.
I think it was very useful. There's a saying, you can't be an expert in your own backyard, that I think is important to look at in this regard. I think that some of our partners might have come up with some recommendations for the projects where we started working on an inclusive approach in Butte and Helena, but I don't know that they would be able to articulate it within the framework of healthy communities in the way that GRADE helped us to do it. And it was really important to be able to point to this as a shared solution across these states who were working on these projects or across other communities, and that we weren't alone in trying to build out healthy communities opportunities for people with disabilities using some recommendations that might have bubbled up locally from experts in our communities. But it was really having it articulated within the healthy communities framework and knowing that we were connected to other communities to do the work. And to say also, some of them seem pretty common sense, and or the impression might be, oh, well, we've got this covered because we have to do that. It's required in the ADA, so we will do that. To move past that and say, it may be required in the ADA and you may have been trained in your professional area to adhere with the ADA, but it isn't the same as engaging a community to fulfill the vision of the ADA, to truly be included. And it was very important, I think, for us to have the grades and the way we moved through our assessment data into what grades might be applicable was to organize a work group that had been involved in conducting the CHI, and then to review the grades for relevant interventions that would be helpful to the projects in those communities. In Butte, for example, one of the grades that we identified after reviewing the CHI together with this work group was public transportation systems should communicate their accessibility and accommodations policies and procedures in accessible formats on websites and stations, shelters, and in vehicles in order to facilitate access to transportation services for people with disabilities. That just got us focused on to what extent was public transportation in the transportation plan update and how well was that represented in the needs assessment data. And similarly, we started to look at some of the gaps in representing bike ped needs in and of themselves, let alone from an inclusive approach. So there's a grades around providing accessible paths of travel to ensure connectivity of school, residential, retail, and health services. These are basic recommendations for building out healthy communities and making sure that they're inclusive is just really strengthening those interventions for the whole community. So as we reviewed the grades in Butte, we started to focus on interventions that would certainly be relevant to the project that we were hoping to make inclusive, but it built out more of a sustainable policy level agenda in Butte. And then in Helena, I would say in the Helena project, the review of the grades with, again, a work group that had conducted the CHI, then we would bring the grades back to the broader coalition. They just really helped us to articulate for the wayfinding project that wayfinding happens in a variety of ways. So when we talk about the grades, it's the one that's just very specific to the wayfinding project says, provide accessible, linguistically appropriate wayfinding, e.g. signage, tactile and visual cues within the design and announcements within and around transportation infrastructure. So we could talk about it and say, no, we're not just talking about brailing. And we're actually talking about the way you design for visual cues and how you make announcements. And the whole communication plan then came into a lens of inclusivity. How do we develop a communication plan, all components of the plan, and even expand the plan so that we're providing information in accessible linguistic appropriate ways. And we were also able to educate what that means, that, you know, the community that's blind and low vision, wayfinding for them is incredibly exciting and technical. They are experts in wayfinding systems that exist using different geocoded virtual platforms and apps. And their expertise really helped the whole coalition move forward from building out a family of physical signs to, you know, what can we be doing in the future for wayfinding based on what the community that is blind or low vision is developing? Is there an application that will be more universal designed for us? And or are there ways that we can integrate some of the electronic wayfinding systems into our family of signs? And we're still working on that intersection and that opportunity. And that's connected us to some of the national partners. And it's really helped us to also think about opportunities for even local projects, like where can we embed iBeacons and making information signs more accessible to everybody, including people who are blind, low vision. So I would say just having that grade helped us to articulate this is not just about the requirements of the ADA for signage. This is about wayfinding systems need to be accessible and linguistically appropriate. And it's a bigger topic, and we were able to bring in national and local partners with very high level expertise around wayfinding.
So I really like hearing your perspective on how the grade was used by your communities, but also really how a simple idea on this best practice list, this menu of options, has ended up having national reach in some examples, such as the inclusive walk audit that has now got a reach that's much bigger than the state of Montana and the two communities of Butte and Helena. And I also really like what you said about the grades really help lead to more sustainable approaches and strategies that the team would eventually pursue. And I think that a framework such as this also sort of lends credibility and merit in the community setting. And the example I think of is Butte's transportation plan update, where when something is listed in the grade that really can augment the information that you provide to those city or county decision makers and elected officials as they upgrade major policies and update and make amendments to major policies like that one. And now as we dive into the final third activity in the prioritization and planning phase, really kind of culminates with the development of a community action plan. And so what happened with this project is our team at NACDD developed a community action plan template, and the communities, after they reviewed their assessment results and after they cross-checked it against the NCPAD's grades framework, they developed policy system and environmental change strategies that they wanted to pursue, and they listed it on this action plan. And we provided training on the template, on how to complete it, as well as what the definitions and how we define the policy system and environmental change. And those communities developed action plans and turned those into us. And those strategies that were listed on the action plan could have taken a twin approach, meaning that communities' ability to build their action plan and their strategies in one of two ways. So either they could develop population-wide strategies that were designed to be inclusive of people with disabilities, or they could develop specific strategies for the disability population itself or a particular group of the disability population. And by allowing our communities to have that own autonomy and allow their data to drive this process, we saw a variety of different types of strategies across the 10 communities. And so, Meg, really thinking about how we took these activities and then we end up in this phase with a community action plan, I want to transition now to hearing more from you about the community action plan process. So specifically, what role did you play as the state expert advisor in Montana with Butte and Helena as they developed their action plan?
So my role is to really say it's not just about that disability partners aren't just about accessible housing or a group home or about a program that somebody knows about that supports people with disabilities, that they have a much broader area of expertise and influence. And so for me, that I was able to say, as we're convening the responsible parties for the different activities that we're going to lay out in our action plan, to make sure that it was this ongoing collaboration, that both partners started to understand what one another could bring to that change opportunity, and to keep that collaboration as consistent through the implementation plan as possible, and to recognize that when it was hard to do those collaborations, that there may be some opportunities to build out a team in a way that maybe wasn't existing. So that collaboration should not be a one-time only or a short-time thing. But if we really want that collaboration to continue or to be easier for this project, having the representation on the Greater Helena Communities, Healthy Communities Coalition, have the right people from MILP at those meetings. And those people who are associated with the Wayfinding Project. Some staff were on the coalition to represent other components of a Healthy Communities agenda, but it really meant for me to say to the executive director at MILP, it's very important that these people from your staff who are working on wayfinding and have that area of expertise and those solutions, this is it. Make sure they're at these meetings, whether it was the broad coalition's meeting or the smaller Plan for Health project team meeting. So making sure that MILP was in the action plan as a valuable partner, and then just being able to suggest how staff are dedicated and organized to being represented in the coalitions and the work group meetings, so that it wasn't an extra meeting or another project. So I would say, you know, one of the examples was when you're looking at community data, who lives where, who could benefit from more active transportation. A lot of times we talk about people who are older. Sometimes we talk about children, and we bring those data and we map them. And a group that's often overlooked are people with disabilities. And so those data are available. And so I'm able to work with our partners at the Research and Training Center on Disability in Rural Communities, the geographers. Then I come back and say, gosh, it just seems like a real need for community planners to be able to integrate some maps around disability at the local level. And so then they make those resources available somehow to guides, as well as some of the profiles and maps. And then I'm able to embed those at in the CAP for Helena and for Butte as, you know, examples of how that can happen. One of the things is just to make sure that everybody understands that disability is dynamic. You know, you may not experience disability last week, but this week you might have an injury or pain that flares up. And you are experiencing disability, and those data are complex to understand, you know, that 17% lives with disability. It's not that there's 17% that always have disability every day, every minute of the day, that it's an experience, and be able to clarify that as we think about who's benefiting and who we should engage in a more detailed way as we build out environmental changes. Helping people understand that, I think, is the role of the state expert.
I agree. I feel like the state expert advisors wear many hats throughout the project, and what I'm hearing from you, if I could summarize it with the prioritization and planning phase among all three of these major activities within this phase, is really making sure the right people are at the table, the right people know each other, are starting to work together, and that working together really continues long after the activity. And I think that's really, really important and really critical when we think about inclusive, healthy communities and making the work important and sustainable. So Meg, as we round up our conversation, you might have already answered this, but my last question for you is, if there are other states or communities listening to this session, what additional advice might you have, or successes or lessons learned for them in thinking about developing a community action plan and really weaving in and using those assessment results to help you develop your plan of action? So what final advice or successes or lessons learned would you want to definitely make sure that they hear from you before we round up this session?
We just always have to emphasize the value within the disability community, that there's nothing about us without us. And so always keeping that in check, that if people with disabilities are not a part of the process, aren't leaders in the process, you're going to end up with things that have been codified many years ago and don't reflect the incredible innovative solutions that people with disabilities are putting on the table, that from a universal design perspective benefits everybody. The opportunities are being evaluated by people with disabilities, and just because it looks like this idea is fundable doesn't necessarily mean it's the right opportunity from the perspective of people with disabilities. They may have a very different way of ranking opportunities, and their input is essential for moving forward in a way that's inclusive. So yes, we can definitely build a curb ramp correctly, but as a community, we should be doing a lot more to make sure that somebody who uses a wheelchair has equal opportunities and does not experience discrimination. So making sure that we are thinking about sustainability, we are working with a broad coalition,
And we have disability partners who have expertise in the ADA at all levels that they're a part of that. And they're given leadership as we build out our healthy communities. I think that's all super essential. That's essential to being inclusive.
I think that's valuable advice, and I think that would definitely benefit any state or community person who might be listening to this podcast. And with that, I want to thank our listeners for tuning in today to our conversation on phase 3 of our Inclusive Healthy Communities Project on prioritization and planning. And I want to thank Dr. Meg Tracy, our state expert advisor for Montana, for her insights on how community coalitions can review and use community health assessment data to select priorities and develop community action plans. And as your time allows, please be sure to check out our next conversation with our state expert advisor from Ohio, Mr. David Ellsworth, on phase 4 implementation.